your dream was to be a dad. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, for me, my biggest sort of goal was to be a good dad, because I think growing up, I was, you know, actually now being older, you actually realize what your parents did for you. And, you know, obviously not coming from much, I think I'm very lucky that my parents gave me the most that they could give me. So yeah, for me now, it's about paying that forward, you know, and making sure that I give my family the most that I can give them.
Hi, you're listening to Bake the Podcast, brought to you by Satiskin. Today, I speak to my husband, Wayne Parnell. We chat to him about cricket, being a dad, and get a little bit emotional as he chats about family life. Let's get into it with Wayne. It's really cool to have you on the podcast, Parnie, but also kind of weird for me because now I feel like I have to be professional in front of you.
I was actually going to ask, am I actually meant to be on here, or are you just filling episodes?
To be honest, we are filling an episode.
Thanks for the honesty.
I think you're a really interesting person. And because I have the advantage of knowing more about you than anyone else, I think, I get to ask you some really cool, deep questions. When did you start playing cricket professionally?
So I got my first contract when I was at the end of grade 11, I think.
Okay.
Or like early in
the trick. How was that for you?
It was quite weird, actually.
Was it weird to have money suddenly?
Well, funny enough, like I was then played for the Eastern Province men's team when I was at school.
Yeah.
And like I was missing school and going to play cricket professionally. Well, it was still semi-pro then, but I was contracted to the Warriors.
Okay.
So it was a bit strange, like being at school.
Is that allowed?
Then, I don't know, actually. Okay. I think you can pretty much contract people like whenever you.
Because grade 11 seems so young to have to, like, you know, have like a job almost. Because it is a job. Playing cricket is a job. If people don't really know that, it's not like you just go and have fun on the field. It's like an actual job. You put like hours into training, and then you play your games, and then you have to look after your body, your health, vitamins, like it's a whole thing, and then the recovery and all that. Like at 17, it seems like a lot.
Yeah, and I think it was quite stressful because it happened at the end of grade 11.
Okay.
And obviously, as every person who's gone through school would tell you, that grade 11 is probably more difficult than grade 12.
Mm.
And it was close to exams, I think, when I started. And I remember, I think we had a game in Johannesburg, and I was like, during the match, it was a 3-day game and then a 50-over game on the fourth day. I was studying and I had my biology book there actually studying while this cricket match was going on. So I was sort of trying to like multitask and stuff. I was not really good at it, but
no, you're not the best multitasker. You're good at a lot of things.
Thanks.
I don't think you're good at multitasking.
I don't think you're a very focused person.
Like you can do one task really well.
Yes, yeah.
But you're not a variety is a spice of life kind of person.
I've always been, you know, someone that loves structure.
Yeah.
And I think, so that was me like.
So isn't it odd for you to be married to me because I don't love structure?
Yes. I mean, we clash heads like all the time. I mean, you can probably tell all your listeners that I love structure. It doesn't have to be like.
It's odd for me because, it's odd for me because I come from your parents are very structured. Like your dad and mom wake up really early in the morning. What time do they wake up? Like 4?
My dad wakes up at like, between 4 and 4:30, like every morning.
Yeah, like when I go stay with your parents, I'm always like, whoa, this house is alive at like 6 o'clock. And your parents like eat at the same time. They pretty much make the same like food on the same days.
Yeah, don't even remind me. I used to eat either spaghetti bolognese or macaroni and cheese every Wednesday for like 21 years because my mom had church on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
So it was obviously easy to whip up and then, yeah.
Yeah, and then I come from a background where my parents are not very structured. Like we didn't sometimes... Like sometimes my mom would phone us from work and be like, just put fish fingers in the oven quickly. Because she would not have thought about dinner. And I'm very similar. I know you always get cross with me because I don't have dinner planned out in my mind. I'm like, oh, I'll just see what happens at 6 o'clock. Maybe we'll eat, maybe we won't. Yeah, so it's really funny because I think that's the one thing we struggle with a lot in our relationship is the fact that you are super structured and I'm very like airy-fairy, go with the flow kind of person.
That's true. But I think on the flip side of that is that I'm not a person that is thrown off by the lack of structure.
What? You were totally thrown off.
I don't think
funny,
so.
Funny, I think like 2 weeks ago you said to me like, there's no structure in this house. What time are we eating dinner? What are we eating? I can't function. You literally said that.
Yeah, but then I still try and make it work.
Obviously, because what else are you going to do? You're not going to leave me because there's no dinner. And what a lot of people don't know about you, because everyone would assume your dream in life was to be a Protea, right? A South African cricketer playing international cricket. But actually, your dream was to be a dad. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, for me, my biggest sort of goal was to be a good dad, because I think growing up, I was, you know, actually now being older, you actually realize what your parents did for you. And, you know, obviously not coming from much, I think I'm very lucky that my parents gave me the most that they could give me. So for me now, it's about paying that forward, you know, and making sure that I give my family the most that I can give them.
But Bonnie, what I think is cool about you and a lot of modern dads is that for you, it's not just about providing financially for Khalid, who's our son. For you, it's also about putting in the time. And a lot of I think young dads are kind of adopting that philosophy of like time is so important. Why do you think, you know, it's important for you to give your time to Khalid and you be present with him?
I think, you know, time is money. And I think time is probably the most valuable thing. I think, you know, I can buy him a nice pair of shoes. I can buy him a toy car. But then in 6 months' time, he's over that, you know. Whereas if I put time in and I try and nurture him and try and, you know, teach him things that are going to last. Because this is something that's really close to me. I think it's
Bonnie never important. Talks about his feelings, so now he's getting teary because
this podcast is going to be the best rated one like this year.
It's the first time you talk about your feelings. I think I'm prepared to asking the hard eating questions.
No, it's a very important question, and I think it deserves a lot of scope. And I think just coming back to time, you know, because whatever you put in, that is going to be your son, that is going to represent your family going forward. So for me, like I said, financially we didn't have much, but what my dad did put in was time, and I spent a lot of time with him and I learned a lot of things from him.
Yeah, you're very much like important. Your dad actually.
Yeah,
like the structure thing and
yeah, you know, having certain things in place, being respectful, respecting people, being nice to everyone.
Do you know, I once asked your dad how he got to have such respectful sons. And he just said, I said, what did you do, Uncle Peter, what did you do? And he said, there was no option. There's no other option.
Yeah. There was no, it was like, this is how you're going to be. And I think that's a very, very important quality that, you know, I'm really thankful that I have that. You know, for me, speaking to the CEO of a multi-million dollar company or speaking to the guy that's cleaning the toilet in the airport is exactly the same. I greet them with the same enthusiasm. I treat them the same. They both serve different purposes in society. But, you know, I think understanding that and, you know, knowing that everyone is important and everyone fits into this massive puzzle that is the world, you know. So that's something that my dad really instilled in me from my young age.
And I think your dad also did a lot of fun things with you, which is really cool. Like your dad took you fishing and that kind of stuff. Like I grew up in a different situation where my parents were also super poor and they were so determined to not be poor that my dad worked really long hours. So we didn't have those like nice moments, playtime and stuff.
Well, just to interrupt you, the fishing was sort of because my dad was unemployed for a few months.
Oh, okay.
So we actually used to go out like every day and go fish.
Oh, and did you do it for money?
Oh my gosh,
I never knew that.
Yeah, so they used to sell the fish.
Do you know that my favorite uncle was a fisherman and I always thought that we just went with him for fun, but actually it was his job.
Yeah, so there was like a couple of months where we'd pretty much go out like every day and we'd go fish and then we'd obviously keep some of the fish because we used to eat it, and then we'd like sell some of it as well.
Did you do other things with your dad that wasn't like work related?
We used to play cricket in the yard like pretty much every day. I think my dad is probably my like first coach, and yeah, probably being the guy that he's gone through the most. Like obviously he'd work all day,
yeah,
and then he'd come home and I'd be like a 6-7 year old like waiting there with my bat like a little puppy.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd have to come home, like get undressed, maybe have a glass of water, and then come and like stand in the garden for 45 minutes and like throw balls at me.
As an athlete and raising Khalid, how do you feel about, you know, the fact that there might be a bit of pressure on him to kind of follow in your footsteps?
I think that pressure will be there, but for me, I think my role, besides being a coach and a mentor to him, would be a father.
Yeah.
And I think that would be, you know, you have to pave your own way. You have to figure out things for yourself.
Yeah.
But
what if kids are like, your dad bowled 147, how come you can't bowl?
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing. You gotta teach them from a young age that every individual is different.
Yeah.
And I think you are your own person and you have your own unique strengths. And I think that's the messaging that I want to get to him, is that,
yeah,
don't do the stuff that I did. Either do it better or do it differently.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be my challenge, is to make sure that he's not compared to me.
Yeah.
That he's compared to himself.
I think as a mom, I'm also nervous about that. Like when he goes to school and stuff. Because I obviously go to Amin, who's our nephew. I go to Amin's cricket matches. And I see how competitive sometimes the parents get on the field. And they like kind of get super into it. And I feel like, oh, what if Khalid's under pressure because his dad was a professional athlete? Like, how am I going to handle it? Because I'm a lot more feisty than you. I'll just like start fighting with parents probably.
it is quite tricky because, I mean, even for myself at high school, my parents didn't come watch games often. But they used to drive past the field every now and then. And I could see them like driving past, or that my dad would like chill outside there. And I actually asked him why he like didn't want to come and watch. And so he said, well, firstly, he was nervous because he didn't want me to like think about him while I was playing.
Okay.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think like when I went out to go play every week, and I didn't think about my dad's sitting here, like I can't get a duck, or
okay,
I have to bowl well, you know what I mean? I just went out and I just played. And I think that is a good thing, but you have to understand your child.
Yeah.
Because he might crave that attention, or he might need that.
Yeah,
for me, I didn't need it. Yeah, so like,
I think Khalid's gonna need it.
Yeah,
he loves attention.
And it's all about having those difficult conversations with your kids.
And I think with your partner, which is me, I think it's important to have that conversation where we like on the same page, because
yeah,
we're mostly on the same page about stuff except about discipline. I think you're more of a disciplinarian. And I'm like more laxy-daisy, like I'll just let Khalid get away with a lot more.
Yeah, I think, well, it depends what it is. I mean, there's one thing that really bugs me is when he throws food.
Yeah.
Other than that, like all the other naughty things he does, I think it's normal, and I think it's all part of growing up, and I think I'm pretty lenient. But the food throwing thing, I honestly can't.
Yeah, I don't know what to...
It gets to be so much.
It doesn't really bother me because I think it's his process of discovering like what food is and what he can do with food. That's what I always tell you. And I'm teaching him to say no thank you, so he doesn't throw it when he doesn't want it. He just gives it back.
Yeah.
When I was pregnant with Khalid, you left the Proteas and you signed a call back. A lot of people don't know the rationale behind you signing call back. So do you want to unpack that? Do you feel like you want to?
I'll just touch on it briefly. I think for me, it was more about family and about having, again, now it's going to sound like I'm this super like OCD structure hungry person, but it was just about having slightly more structure in my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, with it being my, like I said, obviously being a father is one of my biggest goals, and especially for the first one, just trying to be more present.
Yeah.
Because obviously I had the experience of being around other guys who, you know, had kids, and
yeah,
they missed like so much of the like early life. And again, like missing, you know, you think like, oh, 6 weeks, you know, you're only missing 6 weeks, or you're only missing 8 weeks. But in a baby that's 6 months old, like 6 weeks is a massive chunk of his life.
Yeah.
So for me, it was very important to have that, especially with the first one. Maybe the second one will get nothing.
I think like the second one makes me so nervous because like we always talk about this person, the second person that's going to come into the house, or the fourth person. And we always like already that person's disadvantage because we're like, oh no, for the first one, we'll do all these special things. And then for the second one, we'll just let them, you know, fend for themselves.
Yeah. So basically, it was just, yeah. Just coming back to your question, it was more about having this a bit more structure. So yeah. The cold pack then basically would ensure that for 6 months I'm in the UK playing in the county season, and then the other 6 months I'm either in Cape Town or playing in, you know, T20 leagues around the world.
And then we were with you wherever we are.
You know, travel with, and it's also nice because then we get to travel as a family.
Yeah.
It's not as long because most of these tournaments are like about 4 weeks, four or five weeks. So you can come for 2 or 3 weeks of that and then come back home again. So it was just, yeah, trying to balance that. Obviously, giving up international cricket was a massive decision.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it's something that I regret doing because...
You definitely don't regret it.
I'm doing it for a bigger purpose than, you know, just
I think you came to a point in your life, and a lot of people don't understand that being a professional athlete is like any job. And you worked in this job for like almost 10 years. So... needing a change, it's really hard with sportsmen, because you guys have this almost like deep responsibility to the public, which kind of comes into play, and people, public opinion and all that kind of thing. But to take that away, especially for a lot of cricket fans who are listening, if you just think about it as a regular job and a guy who was working at a desk job as a kid, things change for that person. So I think it's almost important to chat about that aspect as well, because it wasn't just like you were thinking about yourself and your career. You were thinking about me and about Khalid and our existence as a family. And I don't think we could have survived our family dynamic in that international setup.
Yeah, I think like I said, it's so tricky because you have three formats. You have the T20s, the ODIs, and the test matches. And you know, I was mostly playing white ball cricket, which is T20s and ODIs. But then also, like, it's not like with county cricket, I go there. You also have the three different formats, but I'm pretty much playing. And then, you know, I have breaks here and there, or if I pick up an injury, then I've got time off. Whereas with the international circuit, it's you're playing, but then also because you have to blood younger players, they might say, oh, you're going to rest for this next tour, but then like you don't know when it's gonna be, so you can't plan your life.
Yeah,
you know, you have to pretty much just like chill at home and wait and wait, and then you see, you either get a phone call to say that you haven't been picked or you see that you've been picked.
Yeah,
you know, so it's also stressful because you can't plan anything as a family. So when you have time off, or say I'm not even playing test cricket now, then suddenly like two guys get injured.
Yeah.
And then I get called up.
That happened to us on our wedding, do you remember?
Yeah.
When they called you to play in the Caribbean.
Then I had to go play in the ODI series.
So when did they phone you? We got married on the
21st. No, I left like 3 days after we got married.
Yeah, we got married on the 21st of May, and then you just
called,
left.
Like, yeah, I left the next Wednesday.
I think Doc called you. Doc was the manager.
That was the week before, yeah.
Doc called you like the week of our wedding. Our wedding was like the weekend, and he called you like the Thursday, and our wedding was a Saturday. Yeah. And he was like, oh, Bonnie, you have to come to the Caribbean. And we were like, what? This is so unfair.
Yeah, and that's the uncertainty. And, you know.
I mean, a lot of producers to me shaking his head saying, how can it be unfair?
Some people. No, it works for some. And I mean, every single time that I've played for South Africa, it's been a privilege.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been lucky enough to do it over 100 times in all three formats.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. And that's,
I don't even know this about
that's
you.
That's great. I mean, some guys are happy to play one game.
So
I don't
and
have
it was
regrets.
Fun for me, I think, going with you and watching you do something you're really good at, because obviously I know you in a different context. And to be quite honest, like when it comes to household things, I'm probably the leader in this family.
Amateur when it comes to
yeah you
things.
Don't even feature, so it's nice to see you in your element when you're playing cricket. I think also the Caribbean for us is such a special place because we conceived Khalid there, and
you know that
right?
Yes.
Okay.
I was there, remember?
Oh, just checking who were there. And also we went there twice. You played in the
CPL.
CPL.
Yeah.
And we got really like attached to the Caribbean lifestyle, and sort of our honeymoon was there in a way. Even though our honeymoon was a Protea cricket honeymoon, it was still a honeymoon to Barbados, and Barbados was like out of this world. So the Caribbean is definitely one of my favorite places in the world. What's your favorite place to travel to?
There are a few different places that I enjoy. Obviously, Australia will always be special because I made my international debut there in T20s and ODIs back in 2009.
Yeah.
But in terms of like an overall experience, I think the Caribbean for me is probably the best. The people are just, they're so friendly. They're so knowledgeable as well.
Yeah.
And it's just super, a special place.
Super smart. Like everywhere you go, everyone's like, just like so intellectual.
And you can have proper conversations about like so many different things. Like when I was in the CPL, like the first year, I think it was in 2016.
Yeah.
I was so surprised because obviously I'd never been to the Caribbean. And then when I went and I spent time with some of the guys who were playing for the Barbados Tridents at that particular time. And we spoke about like so many different things.
Yeah.
And I was just like so taken aback by cricketers who people generally think are like really stupid people.
What?
These guys were like, yeah, like I don't know if it's just the fast bowlers, but like, yeah, these guys, I was just like, so we were speaking about like religion, politics, economics around the world, about like all different types of sport, about like family, about like so many different things.
Yeah.
And for me, I've always had this thing wherever I travel, I try and learn about those particular countries. And for me to learn so much about the Caribbean and how the people operate on the different islands.
Mm.
And that's the funny thing is that like the West Indies, which is the cricket team, they're made up of a bunch of different islands. And those islands are actually countries.
Yeah.
And it's like all different countries playing under one umbrella, basically. And to see, and also just having visited all the different islands, like people are so different in like different islands. But I definitely want to go back to New York.
No, someday. Babe, don't worry, we will go back. Also, I recently found out from Rachel Colisi after she recorded this podcast with me that the person who paid for your schooling lives in the Hamptons in New York.
Whoa, so now we really have to go to New York.
Yeah, I was actually
wondering when I saw the article. Was it an article or was it on CS Instagram or something?
Where, it was CS Instagram, I think.
Yeah, it actually got me wondering. To be fair, I did actually wonder before. I was like, was it like Eastern Province Cricket that paid for my school?
I think you told me, yeah, you were like, EP paid for.
I was like, I'm pretty sure it's like Eastern Province, but to actually find out that it's the same guy is actually cool. So
what Barney's talking about is the same person who funded Sia Kulisi's education. Sia went to school with you. He was in hostel with you as well.
Yeah, he's 1 year, 2 years below me.
2 years, yeah. Sia and Barney were funded by the same guy. And I think he's American. I'm actually not sure.
He's probably a South African that's living in America.
Oh, really? I mean, well, we would know.
Is he in Old Grey?
I don't know.
He has to be in Old Grey. Why would he take an interest in...
How does it feel for you to see... Because I know how it feels for me, but I met Sia and Rachel through you because you went to school with Sia. How does it feel to see like someone you went to school with... like captaining South Africa at the World Cup on like such a big stage?
Oh, it's special. I think the older I get, the more patriotic I get.
Yeah.
In terms, not just for athletes, but musicians, actors, actresses, business people. I think whenever I'm overseas and I see a South African or I hear South African music or see anything that's South African, I always like...
I literally hype
it up.
Yeah.
I remember when I went to Worcestershire the first time in end of 2018. I was playing like Questa's music and AKA's music and Casper's music, and the guys were like, "Hey, what is this? Like, it sounds so cool." And I actually had the guys dancing in the dressing room.
Yeah,
and
that's
for
so
me
awesome.
That's such a cool thing because you know, music is one of those things that transcends like throughout the world.
Yeah, I know, and you love music and fashion, Bonnie.
Yeah.
Can you tell everyone about your DJ career?
It was very short-lived. It didn't really go hand in hand with being a professional athlete. But like I said, music's something that I really love. And I started DJing when I was like, I think it was like 20 maybe.
Yeah.
1920. Just for a bit at home and I did a couple of stints like at a club. I DJed with Roger Good.
I know, like, you. DJed that's your Roger claim Good. To fame.
That's my, like, yeah.
I remember when I came to PE to meet your parents, you DJed for me.
Yeah. Was I decent?
I don't know. I liked you, so I think I thought you were amazing. Simi says we should tell people how we met. So why don't you tell the story?
We basically set up on a, I want to say, a blind date, a blind WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. I finished playing a game. I think it was a Friday night.
Yeah.
And we finished playing a game in PE. Elizabeth, and I got home, I had a shower, I got out of the shower, and I was still wet, and I had my, like, towel wrapped around me. And
well, the screen came very sexy now, you were wet with a towel around you. Anyway,
no, I literally picked up my phone and I just saw this contact on my WhatsApp, "Hello honeys," and I had, like, sunflowers. I was like, is this, like, a bunch of the guys now, like, creating a group so we can go out?
Yeah.
Like, what? The next thing, it was like, "Hi Wayne, this is Aisha. Hi Aisha, this is Wayne." And then, like, bye. And then, like, the one other person deleted themselves, and it was a number.
Yeah.
And I was like, "That's weird." And then I was like, "Hey, what's up? Like, what is this all about?" And then I think we just got chatting. And
yeah,
then
that's right.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
No, that's not it.
The rest is history, as they say.
Oh, okay. You don't want to tell the rest of the story.
No,
that's
then
fine.
We obviously met up. What was it like? We had a match here in Cape Town, and I think I came down a day earlier.
Yeah.
And then we went for dinner.
Yeah.
I had my best friend with me, Faisal.
Why did you bring Faisal with you to the date?
I don't know. It was just, I just wanted to be, like, super casual.
Was it not a date for you?
I don't know. I don't like to, you know, I'm not the one for, like, labels and
stuff. I thought it was a date. You know, I had my hair blow dried.
I know, I saw.
Professionally.
I saw you, like, we actually saw you, like, standing on the one side, like, I don't know, you were obviously waiting for us because we were late.
I phoned Annalisa, who was my best friend, and I was complaining to Annalisa that the hairdresser blew my hair into curls, and I didn't like it because it looked, like, so done, and all I just wanted to look was, like, nice. That's what was happening when you saw me.
Oh, dear. Yeah. And then we had sushi.
At Willoughby's. Pony, you don't care about the story. Just
no, I'm literally, I'm getting to the juicy part where I ordered some edamame beans. And you, I don't know, maybe you thought it was green beans or something. But, like, you know, with edamame beans, you have to, like, take out the little beans on the inside and not eat the outside. And then, like, you were chewing, like, on the whole thing. And I looked at you and then I was like, "Oh, what is this girl doing?" And then
never ate edamame beans before.
And then for some, like, weird reason, I just, like, stuck my hand out and, like, you spat it out, like, in my hand.
Yeah.
And then, like, we all laughed and stuff. And then
that was love before coronavirus.
Yeah, I was just about to say, if it was now, I'd have been like, take that out of your mouth.
Pony, can you tell us what you think you want to do after cricket?
I actually wouldn't mind having, like, a nice little coffee shop.
Yeah, you love coffee.
I'm an introvert, but I think when I'm in the right surroundings, like, I want to say, like, super talkative or, like...
You're quietly confident,
I think, so...
I never thought you could run a coffee shop because you've always said you think you might want to have a coffee shop. And I was always like, "Oh, I don't know, Bonnie, da-da-da." And then we had the charity clothing sale where we had to sell our own clothes. And then you really loved dealing with customers. You were, like, so good at it. So then I thought, actually, maybe you'd work in your own space, you know, your own coffee shop that you designed.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's about trying to, you know, even if you go into something... It's about trying to make the most of it. And for me, I've always been a person that whatever I do, I'm always willing to try something at least once, whether I'm good at it or not.
Yeah.
And trying to find a way that I can be the best that I can be in that particular space.
Yeah.
So I'm always up for, like, trying stuff. I'm a very cautious person and very conservative person, but, you know, since I've met you, I've probably become a bit more, like, out
risky.
There.
Risky. Yeah.
Not, I wouldn't say more risky. I'd say probably just... trying to be more myself because that's something that you've probably, like, instilled in me is that, you know, always be who you want to be.
Yeah.
Don't try and and be what other people want you to be. So
I remember
for me,
those
are like,
the ponytail days when that lesson came out.
No, it's
I was like, pony, just you want the ponytail,
like, do it,
dye the ponytail, and then I didn't know if it was going to make international news.
Yeah, I think that's crucial, and I think, you know, because obviously went into my career like super young, and you sort of train to be a certain way and act a certain way and speak a certain way, you sort of lose yourself. And for me, I've always been creative. I've always had that underlying creativity in all assets, aspects of my life. And it was just about bringing them to the fore, basically.
I think you are you answered that question like it was super sport. I felt like I needed to like be Julia Stewart, like hello Wayne Pono. You answered very professionally. I appreciate that. I think you are a very creative person. You take a lot of my pictures, for example, and you're very good at it. Like I said, you picked up DJ equipment and you started DJing. You like really love fashion and the arts and all kinds of interesting things. I think the most exciting thing that happened for me last year was taking you to an art gallery for the first time and seeing you like really enjoy it.
Yeah, it was, again, I mean, I think of art and I'm like, I mean, I don't want to go to an art gallery, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then I end up going and then I'm like, wow, it's actually really cool. And then you read about the artists and the time that they, you know, and for me, that's a fascinating thing and probably something I really enjoy is, again, learning about different countries, different cultures, different types of people. And that then interests me. And then I somehow like want to do research on it. And then I, you know, want to learn more and do more of it and do more of that. So
it's cool, like being around you, I think, which is really awesome. I think that one of the things that you taught me is how to like throw yourself into a task and really just like absorb everything within it. So like when you're learning photography, for example, you were like super into it. You like researched everything and you got really into it. And I try and also do that now because I've got quite a scatterbrain and I tend to like think about all the million different things I could do instead of just focusing on one thing.
Yeah, it's so funny actually, like since I've known you, like with you being a person that just goes with the flow, but when it comes to like your business and your brand, like you're very conservative. Which is like strange. People would think that you just be a person to like just, oh, I have this idea, do it.
Yeah,
you like very methodical and like you think about things like from A to Z, Z to A, one to infinity and back again. And
I think like, when it comes to my brand, it's because of the way my degree was like set up and the person I worked for straight after uni, she taught me like how to be methodical. So then I became that kind of person when it came to my business. I know it took me like a very long time to launch my clothing line, which is only launching this year, because I was so like scared or I had a lot of fear attached to that. Do you ever find like you're scared of failure and stuff like that?
Oh yes, all the time.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. I think anyone that like tells you that they're not scared to fail is lying. I think
really, do you think they're lying?
Definitely. Fear is what drives people.
Yeah.
You know, if you're driving from point A to point B, I mean you might not be fearful, but there's a chance that you could be in an accident.
Yeah.
And that makes you cautious. And that makes you want to get to point B. So when I'm playing cricket as well, like I understand that there are ways that I can fail.
Yeah.
I'm not like, oh no, I'm not letting it consume me, but I'm aware of my, you know, sort of negative parts. And even me as an individual as well, I know that there are a lot of negative parts to me. I'm becoming more aware of them. I think you're the person that always says that, like, know your weaknesses.
Yeah, I always say that.
People always say, like, know your strengths, but you say, like, know your weaknesses, which
is such
a valid point. I
think, like, if you
point.
Know your weakness, no one can use it against you because you know where you need to work harder, where you need to, like, perfect.
Yeah, and that's something that I've started, like, taking note of more.
Yeah.
It's like if I'm weak at something, like, ah, okay, cool. I don't let it get me down too much.
Yeah.
I think, like, ah, okay, cool. I'm not that good at this. Let me dive into that. Let me get my weakness to a decent
strength.
Level because my strength's always going to be good.
Yeah.
And if I can, and my strength can't increase by 10%, it can increase by a 1% or a 2%.
Yeah.
But my weakness can get better by a 15%.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so I think that's the way that I try and like look at things these days. I think it's just, I'm just getting older.
Yeah. Getting older is dope. How old are you now? 31.
No, not yet.
Oh, you said tea, right? We said tea, yeah. What's the... I did ask this on Instagram recently. That's going to be my closing question. What's the thing that you thought about before you were 30, like what 30 was going to be like, or the assumption you made about 30? And then how does it feel now that you are 30?
I don't really know how to answer that question because I didn't really think of it. Like, oh, when I get to 30, like my life's going to end, blah, 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 or, you know, my life's going to begin. I think for me, what 30 represents, like, in my career is that it's probably towards the end of my career.
Okay.
I reckon, you know, if all goes well, I've got, what, maybe like 5-6 years left.
Mm.
If everything goes well, I'll probably go past that. But, you know, but then in other aspects, you know, then it's a opportunity to, like, start something new as well. And obviously my son was born as well around the age of 30, so I don't know, it's just I don't really think about like these sort of milestones. I mean, there is one thing that I'm thinking about is when I turn 30, my son will be 21.
When you turn 30, no, you mean when you turn 50. 50,
sorry.
Yeah.
And so that's
so cool.
Like, that's one thing that I'm
can't
looking
wait
forward
to plan
to.
Those
so,
parties.
Yeah, I think that's probably one thing. But I haven't really thought about, like, oh, no, I'm 30 now. What does it mean? What does it represent? Like, a lot of people put that. And I think that's the thing. Like, why attach, like, something to that specific? Why 30? Why not, like, 35? Why not, like, 37?
So you don't believe in putting all that expectation on yourself?
Because, like, what I've learned is that, you know, you can plan stuff, but ultimately when it's meant to be, it's going to happen. You know,
exactly.
Like I didn't think that at the age of, what, 19, I was going to play for South Africa.
Mm.
It just kind of, I mean, obviously didn't just happen, but, you know, next thing I open my eyes and I'm in Australia playing in front of like 40,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, and at the age of 19. Now I'm 30, like I've got a child.
Mm.
I've got a family that I have to look after and that, you know, I love spending time with. So I didn't think that, like, at the age of 25, I'd have this. At the age of 30, I'd have that. Or
that's so, you know, funny because so I'm the opposite. I thought I wanted to be married by 21.
23 of this.
Yeah. Okay, Pony, thank you so much for being on the podcast. For those who want to follow Pony, you can follow him at Ponygram on Instagram. And what's your Twitter?
At Wayne Parnell.
Yes. And then you can follow us at Baked Online is my handle, www.bakedonline.co.za. And you can find our podcast on all podcast apps. Please share with your friends and don't forget to subscribe to our channel. See you soon. Cheers.
This is a POC podcast
powered by Blue Blood.